I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck as expertise-based business owners. Would you like to learn how you can generate more leads without struggling to deliver your services to the clients you already have? What if you were taught how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage tools like podcasts, social media, and video in order to constantly bring in leads, sales, and keep your pipeline full? And what if you knew how to hire the right talent that'll help you scale your business and create greater value without being so hands-on? Join our free Smashing the Plateau community, where listeners and guests of Smashing the Plateau connect, collaborate, and learn how to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life. Go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join. That's www.smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Sufit. After 10 years as a Dean's List litigation lawyer, Sufit left law for the limelight, performing comedy on national TV and gaining international attention for her debut music CD. Recently featured in Forbes, Sufit is now the author of the award-winning book Step Into the Spotlight, A Guide to Getting Noticed, endorsed by Al Reese, Jack Trout, J. Conrad Levinson, Robert Cialdini, Tom Peters, and many other leaders in the arena of marketing and influence. Sufit now coaches entrepreneurs and professionals to get seen, get heard, get noticed, and get known. A popular radio and television show guest, keynote speaker, seminar leader, and mom, Sufit points out that she is not taking on any more clients in the last category. Sufit, welcome to the show. Yeah, I love that.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Glad to be here.
So I guess you're taking on more clients in other categories. So let's talk about the non-mom categories. And you have a really interesting path that you've taken. And I'm really curious, what inspired you to leave law and pursue comedy and music?
You know, I'd been performing since I was a little kid, since the age of 6, you know, performing on the neighborhood deck to kids below and all through high school and university and things like that. And then I always wanted to be an actress, a singer, but I was practical. So I went to law school, became a lawyer, had the four daughters in 4 years. And one day woke up and kind of had that Peggy Lee moment, you know, that is there all there is moment. And so decided to leave law for the limelight, you know, left the law, kept the kids, and decided to follow my dream. Did that for several years and, you know, with some success. But then I thought, you know, you really should feed the kids more than once a week. So I thought, okay, well, how can I take everything that I've learned from this? And, you know, they say about being an actress or a singer, I think Jan Arden said this, it's the only profession where you can headline at Maple Leaf Gardens. That's kind of like Madison Square Garden in Canada. You can headline at Maple Leaf Gardens and still have to take the subway home, you know? So I became a coach, teaching people what I knew about how to get seen, get heard, get noticed, and get known, which I learned through, you know, being a singer, actress, comedian. And I started teaching that to entrepreneurs. And business owners and professionals, and ironically also to lawyers, which is kind of funny considering I was on the other side of that.
Yeah, but
before.
I guess that means you understand exactly what they're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, being a lawyer or any other professional to the outside world is kind of like a commodity thing. You know, you need an accountant, you need a lawyer, you need a financial advisor. We see them like, you know, a plumber, whatever it is, we see that as a commodity. Lawyers don't see themselves that way. They see themselves as experts. But, you know, on the hierarchy of things, they're really only one up from salesperson because they, you know, they're not known necessarily, most of them, for anything. So, yeah, I understand that from their perspective. And also I understand it now from the outside world's perspective, which is, you know, if I needed – I once spoke at an event, a live event, and there were – a lot of suits in the audience. And so I said to the audience, I said, anybody here who's even remotely related to money, stand up, like, you know, accountants, financial advisors. And then I brought about 30 of them to the front of the room. And then I said to the audience, if you needed, you know, a money person, let's say an accountant or financial advisor, which one of these guys would you pick? They all looked the same. I said, okay, they look the same. But let them, so they each introduced themselves in 30 seconds. And then I said to the audience, okay, now which would you pick? Again, there was no reason to pick any of them because they all sounded the same. So, yes, to answer your question, I understand where they're coming from, and they need to get away from being there.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, in your description, it sort of strikes me that a lot of people that are in expert-based businesses, particularly those that are that have been doing it for a while, so their expertise is really honed, they're really good at what they do, they're very often they're one down from salespeople because the salespeople are actually bringing in business. And very often I find that people that have expertise-based businesses, especially when things around us change, we don't necessarily change along with it in terms of how we do our business. You know, so like, you know, as an example, I mentioned in the introduction that we have all these new tools available, social media, podcasts, videos, etc. And we're all barraged by all kinds of content all the time. And if you are a suit, like so many other people, how do you get noticed? How does somebody know that they really need what you have to offer? And I see so many people that struggle with this. So what advice can you offer?
Well, you know, it's funny. I wrote 288 pages of advice on exactly this subject. The first is to find your story. Find the color, find the flavor, find the story. Everyone has a story. Not everyone realizes that he or she has a story. So I had a client who was, she had a speakers bureau, and she was invited to give a speech to these professional speakers. And she brought me this speech, and it was really boring. And when I interviewed her, I found out that she grew up on a tomato farm. And she used to help her dad take tomatoes to market. She was about 8 years old when she did this. And I said, well, that's great. There's some color. I mean, literally, there's some color and there's some visualization for your audience. So I said, well, why don't we make an analogy between speakers and tomatoes? And we did. We did this whole thing in her speech where she said, you know, some speakers are still green, you know, like tomatoes. Some are ripe and plump and juicy and ready to take to market. And some are just plain rotten, right? And she said she had the audience in the palm of her hand. At the end of them, you know, they all came up to speak to her just by using a simple little analogy and just by delving into what her story was. I had another client who has a web design kind of business. And one of the many things she did was books, but she also did websites and, you know, postcards and business cards, all the usual graphic design stuff. So first thing I said to her is, well, let's lose all that other stuff and just focus on the one thing that stands out from what everything you've told me, the books, okay? Because already that's going to be different. But secondly, it's not enough just to do that. We have to find your color, your flavor, your story, just like I'm telling you. So I interviewed her, and guess what I found out? She grew up in the Swiss Alps in a 600-year-old farmhouse. She had never told the story to anybody before because she didn't think it was relevant. And she used to love books. And she used to run down the valley of the mountain that she lived in because that's where the library was. And I said to her, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could say that your favorite book was Heidi because you're living in the Swiss Alps? And she said, Sophie, it was. And the reason that I said that is because the name of my client was Heidi. So anyway, she told this story about how she never owned any books, so she had to go to the library to get them, and how her favorite book was Heidi. The whole story. She said for the first time ever, she was at an event where they were in little circles of 10 women, and 8 of them, entrepreneurs, business owners, 8 of them immediately came up and asked for her card. Again, she had never told that story before. It brought color, it brought flavor. She eventually changed the name of her business, which was some kind of graphic design and associates, whatever it was, business. She changed it to We Make Books. And told that story. And again, so that's the answer to your question. How do you do it? You add color, you add flavor. And you become distinct. My audience, my clients are primarily what you just described. They're expert-based business owners, sometimes solopreneurs, sometimes bigger than that. But what they all have in common is that the directing mind of the organization, even if it is a slightly bigger organization, is very entrepreneurial. Well, that person's got a story. You know, I have another client right now who's a financial advisor, you know, swimming in the sea with all these other, you know, financial advisors, doesn't seem very interesting to his audience. But he has this whole story about how he came from the old country, from Italy, and his grandfather came without a dime in his pocket. I mean, it's a story you hear, but, and then his father ran into some issues with medical benefits, and so the son was insecure, so he became a financial advisor. So again, there's a reason that the guy is a financial advisor. So now if he stood up as one of my 30, I'm going to go to the guy with the story. I'm going to go to the guy that I can relate to. I'm going to go to the guy that had color and flavor. So there's a long answer to your very good question.
I'm really curious actually to go a drop deeper into this, which is, why is the story so important? If I'm the buyer, and what I really want is to have a money manager who is going to achieve, let's say, 5% return above market, why do I have to have somebody whose story resonates with me? Why isn't it more important to find somebody who knows how to get that extra 5%?
You know, that's a very, very good question, David. We don't always want what we think we want. Now, of course, everybody wants a higher return. I mean, obviously, that's why you go to a money manager. But the truth is, we're not as price sensitive. We're not as money sensitive as the world would lead us to believe. Dan Kennedy talks a lot about this, and he talks about that only 20% of the population is really that price conscious, and other people will be influenced by other factors. And in this case as well, with a financial advisor, one thing you want is a better return. The other thing you want is to feel comfortable. I remember once when I was hiring a professional and I decided to myself, this was a commodity service that I was buying. So I decided ahead of time, Sufit, I'm not going to be influenced by anything except price, right? And I interviewed 4 people and I ended up choosing the most expensive against what I had told myself because I thought it was a commodity. And it really was a commodity. Anybody could have done this. I felt more comfortable with this person, you know? So stories make us feel more comfortable. Stories make us feel like this person gets me. So you just said, well, all this person wants is a 5% better return. Well, that's not necessarily true. That's maybe what the person thinks that he or she wants, but he also wants to feel comfortable. Same thing with the doctor. We don't necessarily go to the best doctor. Sometimes we go to the doctor who makes us feel the most comfortable because there was an experiment with wine and beer, actually two different experiments. I'll tell you about the beer one first. They had beer with 4 different names, and they did taste tests, and they had the people describe what they thought the beer tasted like. This one's awful, this one's wonderful, whatever. And they had these 4 different names. Okay, so that's one test. Then they had another, a different test with wine, two different bottles of wine, and they did the taste test. They've done this even with energy drinks. Well, in all of these cases, I'm sure you guessed the punchline. They use the same wine or the same beer or the same energy drink. It's the identical thing. It's usually in a different bottle. Or sometimes it just has a different price. And based on the price, we either think it's better or worse. Now, sometimes we think the more expensive one is better. People think that we'll think the cheaper one is, you know, more valuable. But we think, no, sometimes we think the more expensive one is better. So we're not only buying what we think we're buying. That's the short answer to your question. Yes, the guy wants a better return, but at what cost? You know, would you go to get a better return if you hated the guy, if he made you feel uncomfortable? Maybe some people would say yes. Maybe other people would say, no, I want to feel like this guy's on my team.
Do you think it's hard for people who haven't learned how to, let's kind of learn what their story is and learned how to own it? Do you think it's hard in the beginning for them to start to express it in a business context?
It can be. It can be hard, but it doesn't have to be. You know, you can go to a coach or even just to a friend. Sometimes it's better a stranger because friends know you. But you know, if you go to a stranger to kind of interview you and see what your story is, because a lot of times we think the most interesting thing about, listen, I've been coaching for over 15 years. And it's always, almost always true that the thing that I pinpoint is very colorful and interesting about a person, you know, they don't think it's any big deal. I had another client, may she rest in peace. She passed away a few years ago. But when I interviewed her, she told me a story about running away from a bear. Like it really happened to her that she ran into a bear. And there was another story, same person, where she had to swim across the lake and she got tired, you know, halfway through. And was she going to go back? Was she going to continue? Anyway, she ended up continuing, got to the other side. She had never told those stories, but she was a coach, a business coach. So we made up this whole thing about, you know, with the water thing, about navigating rough waters, you know, the analogy. With the bear thing, we made up this whole comedic thing for her speech. These are things she never told anybody else. And all the things that I told you about the Swiss Alps, about the coming, you know, from Italy, about the tomatoes, none of these people had told these stories before. And these are the, you see, part of it also, when you're trying to, stand out in a crowded marketplace from everyone else, you have to give somebody, you know, your prospect, something to latch onto, something to remember you by. I mean, you know, Seth Godin might call this a purple cow, but when he talks about the purple cow, I think he's really talking about a differentiator in your business. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a differentiator in your business. It could just be, if you're selling the identical commodity, let's say you had 10 people and they're all selling pencils, identical pencils, right? Or pens, let's say pens. You could have one person charge, you know, $1,000 for the pen and somebody else charge 10 cents for the identical pen. Well, how could you differentiate those two pens? Well, one could say that, you know, this is the pen that, you know, Lady Diana signed her whatever with, right? Or whoever's an important figure in your society. Or this is, you know, these are churned out by the zillions in some, you know, third world country or whatever. So there's a place in Toronto that sells $100 hamburgers. Okay, I don't know what you can do to a hamburger to make it worth $100, because you can make 100 hamburgers for $100. And they probably don't sell a lot of the $100 hamburgers, but it makes it remarkable. It makes it stand out, and it makes you interest in the other hamburgers. So it could be your story. It could be your personal story. If you really feel like you're boring and you don't have an amazing story, it could be a story of one of your clients. It could be the story of somebody in your family. I had a client once, it was a story about her grandmother. It could be a story from when you were a kid. That's a really good place to start. Is, you know, I had one client who said, yeah, I, you know, helped out. Actually, I'm thinking of three different clients when I start to tell you this story, but one of them had to stand on an apple box to help at the store of her parents that she worked at. Another one worked in her dad's hardware store. She's now a financial advisor, multimillionaire, but she had to, you know, organize the screws and separate them from the nails. And so these stories, again, if you get up and tell them, it creates empathy. It creates affinity with your audience. It creates distinction. It creates understanding. It makes you more memorable. It makes you more accessible to your audience. So when you ask me, David, is it hard to get at your story? It can be if you're sitting at your desk trying to come at it alone. I'm sure some of your listeners are listening right now and saying, yeah, Sufi, you know, I know you say you have all these clients with all these stories, but I'm really boring and you'll never squeeze a story out of me. And I've had a few clients who've said that to me. You know, and some clients actually even have mental blocks around their stories because there's stuff that they buried that they don't want to share, or maybe something traumatic happened. But if it's not a story about you, it, like I said, it could be a story about your client, it could be about your siblings, could be about your extended family, could be about a friend, or it could be the story of why you're doing what you're doing. There are so many. I mean, look, Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, you know, became mega gazillionaires just compiling other people's stories in their chicken soup books, because people really do find inspiration and motivation and a way to distinguish you in your story. So if you can't find it easily by yourself, ask, you know, either go to a coach or just ask a stranger to interview you and tell you what they think is interesting and colorful about you.
Great points. I hope you're enjoying our discussion today with Sufit. The three biggest struggles that owners of expertise-based businesses have are generating leads without dropping the ball with existing clients, hiring the right manpower that allows them to not be so hands-on, and stepping out of their comfort zone to leverage new tools like podcasts, social media, and video. And you can join our free Smashing the Plateau community on Facebook to get exclusive step-by-step training from guests of the show and other successful entrepreneurs around these issues. You can go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join. I wondered if we could talk a little bit about what I just mentioned, which is social media and other ways of getting noticed, and how some of the things that you do play out in those arenas.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting. Before we get to social media, I just want to say about social media. I get asked about this a lot, and the one thing that I say to you know, anyone who interviews me about social media is one has to understand that social media is really just another form of media. So we have to see this in context. What is media? Media could be a newspaper. It could be a television station, a radio station, you know, podcast like the online media world, or it could be a social media group. So the very first thing one has to recognize is that there's no magic to social media other than that it's a separate outlet and in many times much more cost effective than traditional media. You don't have to have typesetters, which they don't have anymore anyway, but you know, you don't have to churn out paper copies of your newspaper. You don't have to pay for airtime on a terrestrial radio station or terrestrial TV station. That's what we call like quote unquote a real radio or TV station, in the olden days. So social media is wonderful for many, many reasons. But if you expect, as many of my clients do when they first come to me until I give them the speech that I'm giving you now, if you expect that there's going to be a magic to social media, if you don't know what your message is and you don't know who your audience is, you don't know who your and you don't know what you're selling, right? You don't know, you know, what you're offering, what you're marketing. You're not going to find any magic in social media. And so I have clients all the time who bring me these social media proposals that they got from these social media gurus about how they're going to put them out on Facebook and they're going to SEO, you know, raise the SEO of their website or their blog, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. But they don't have a basic understanding of why should anybody care that I exist? Why should anybody care about my product or about my book or about my coaching or whatever it is, or my service, whatever I'm trying to sell? So that's the first thing I'd say about social media. That said, social media is an amazing tool. And it can be a very overwhelming tool if you allow your head to be turned by all the people say, you got to be on Facebook, you got to be on Twitter, you got to be on LinkedIn, you got to be on Instagram, you got to be on, you know, 95 gazillion other media platforms, and they change from day to day. Now, we've seen presidents get elected, you know, on social media platforms like Twitter and others. So, you know, it can be used effectively as a broadcast medium. Twitter is essentially, you know, they say it's a social media and interactive media, but it's essentially for many people a broadcast medium similar to, and in fact, J. Conrad Levinson, he also passed away a few years ago, but he used to make this point about broadcasting versus narrowcasting. And the old TV stations used to broadcast, and now with social media, you can narrowcast. You can get exactly to who you want to talk to. So one thing that I've done with social media is I created my own community, and I chose, you know, a lot of people choose Facebook. It sounds like you have. I chose LinkedIn as the place to build my community. So I created a Step Into the Spotlight group on LinkedIn with thousands of members now. And what I do is I try to be very, very clear about who my audience is. So for you guys who are listening or thinking about how do I use social media to further my message, you can either be the host of the party, you know, create your own group on Facebook or on LinkedIn or wherever you do it, on Google, or you can participate in many groups. So I'm a member of probably 100 other LinkedIn groups, and it's a great place to go meet people. And then, you know, the ones who are relevant to me to invite them to my group. And I don't just haphazardly join those groups. I join groups of coaches because a lot of my clients are coaches, lawyers because a lot of my clients are lawyers, radio and TV because that's relevant to me as well. So I look for where my authors, because I coach, I teach the book creation workshop. So I look for communities of people who would hold, you know, groups of either prospects for me or other experts. So I chose, if you do decide to build your own community online, you have two choices based, well, I have many choices, but there's a fundamental choice you want to consider. Do you want to create a fishing pond? You know those artificially stocked ponds where it's not like a real lake, but it's like you stock the lake with salmon or trout or whatever, and then you people pay you to go fish in your pond. So do I want to stock my own pond of prospects? A lot of coaching groups are like this, where there's one guy who wants to be the head coach, and he gets a lot of coaching prospects in his group and then tries to impress them with how smart he or she is, and then, you know, grow clients out of that group. That makes a lot of sense. It works for a lot of people. That's not what I chose to do. I chose to have some prospects, but also to invite all my competitors to join my group. So I have people who teach about how to write a book. I have people who teach about speaking, which I also teach. I have people who teach about marketing and branding and promotion, which I also teach. So I brought all my biggest competitors, some of which are much bigger names than me, and invited them to join my group. So it would be a destination place more than just based on the draw of my name. I wouldn't just be the anchor tenant, but I'd have a lot of, you know those movies in Hollywood, I think Robert Altman does a lot. He doesn't have just one or two, three movie stars. He's got like 20, 30, 40. Woody Allen does that as well. So that's one choice if you're on social media. The other thing on social media is you have to choose. If you try to be on all of them all the time, I think you will spend your whole life. I mean, even just with my LinkedIn group, it's insane the amount of time that I spend just on social media. So a lot of choices to be made around that, and you can't have everything. So you really have to decide which of these activities makes the most sense for you and where are your clients, okay? So I have a lot of people trying to push me to Facebook, which, you know, may make sense, and it obviously does for you, David. I find my clients on LinkedIn. I do have a Facebook presence. I do have a Twitter presence, but again, I have to choose where I spend most of my time. The last thing I would caution everybody with social media is you don't own the platform. I don't own LinkedIn. You don't own Facebook. You know, certain presidents don't own Twitter, as we saw for 11 minutes the other day. Anybody can boot you off. Anybody can boot you off any platform at any time. And you know what? These big platforms are famous for having rules, and if you violate these rules, you get blacklisted. You can, and I think about this all the time. You know, I have over 6,600 people. Probably by the time you air this, will be more in my LinkedIn group. And I think, well, what if LinkedIn decides tomorrow they don't like me anymore, or I do something to infringe something, and they boot me out? What happens to all that work over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years? So one thing you want to do, if you're building a social community, social media community of your own, one thing you must do, and I hope you're doing this too, David, is you must find somewhere to guide your members, your followers, your participants to a platform where you own it. Now, I don't own another group separate from my LinkedIn group, but I do have, you know, my spotlightsecrets.com series, which is, an email autoresponder series. So as much as possible, not everybody does it, but once I get to know somebody on LinkedIn or in my LinkedIn group or on any platform, I say, by the way, I have these 11 free secrets to how you can stand out in 30 seconds, grab them at spotlightsecrets.com, and hopefully as many as possible people will go there. Then they're in my email list. Then I own that list. And so I would suggest to anybody who's building a social media world, make sure that you back that up. Usually these platforms allow you to back up the people that you're linked with. But the other thing is, make sure you get them somewhere in a permission-based way. Like, I can't just take all my many thousands of contacts and dump them into my own autoresponder series, because that violates, you know, anti-spam regulations and rules and laws. So I have to entice them with something valuable to go there, and I would suggest that everybody do that as well.
Tufiq, this is great advice, and let's pull this all together with one bonus question, which is, what are the top actionable steps that you've used in your own business to create the success that you've had? And before you answer, I'm going to ask you to hold it because we're going to put the answer to this question inside our Facebook group. So listeners, if you want to hear the answer, go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join, and that's where we will share the answer to this bonus question with Sufit. Sufit, whom do you know personally who's been successful at smashing plateaus?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think I can name one person, who I know personally. I know many, many people. So I'm not going to give you one particular name, but I will answer your general question about, what activity somebody can do to smash the plateau. And I think that in my personal career, one of the things that helped me the most to smash the plateau was the book, Creating Step Into the Spotlight, A Guide to Getting Noticed, the book. I was a coach before that, and, you have to have a great speech, which is also something that's very important. But having the book helped me to crystallize my message. First of all, it helped me to realize what my message was, because I had been a coach for 6 years before that. And, I was a one-on-one coach at that time. So I wasn't forced to crystallize my message. I wasn't forced to distill it, because, I'd meet with you and I'd give you advice or, help you in any way that you needed it, and I'd help someone else. And then when I wrote the book, it forced me in 288 pages to say, what is it that I want to stand for in the marketplace? And I wrote another book first. I didn't think it was good enough to be the one thing I wanted to stand out for in the marketplace. So I scrapped that other book. Actually, I wrote two other books first. I didn't finalize them. I took one chapter from one of them and rewrote it. And I made the book that I was proud to stand in the marketplace with. And it has served me. The thing is, this book stands without you. I can mail it to people around the world. People can order it from around the world. I can send it to the leaders of networking groups and conferences, and that will lead them to bring me to speak, which leads people in the audience to hire me as an expert, right? So if you're just going to do one thing, I would suggest that could be the one thing. Now, that's a big undertaking. I don't suggest you take the, write a book in a weekend thing, because those kinds of books will line your basement and your garage, but not necessarily bring you clients and speaking engagements. And by the way, publicity, a ton of publicity as a direct result from the book. I ended up in entrepreneur.com, in airline magazines and national TV a lot of stuff. Actually, the national TV documentary was before I had the book, but a lot of other, national TV shows as a result of that. So that is something that really did help me and many people I know smash the plateau. But other than that, you really have to get out of your way. Don't get it perfect. Get it going. Matt Basak said that, and I've heard many variations of that. But I once was trying to get started with, group programs, and which I now have three online self-study programs, which I did live first. But before I did that, I didn't know how to record. You talk about technology being a barrier, David. You're absolutely right. I didn't know how to do it. I took a program with Alex Mendozian about how to do what they called at that time teleseminars. And one thing he said was, you have to use a corded phone, a phone with a cord, and you have to use a headset that goes with that corded phone. And the whole thing, he told me exactly what we had to do, right? And I remember speaking to one of the other participants or graduates of that program and complaining to her that I bought the headset that he said and it doesn't work for me and I'm not comfortable with it and all this stuff, right? You know what she said? She said, Sufit, ignore everything he said and just do it. Just do your first one. So I ignored everything he said. I did it on a battery-operated, portable, not a cell phone, but a portable phone. It didn't have a cord. I didn't use a headset. I got an amazing, amazing product. There were, 100 people live on the call, recorded it, and it became the first product. I called it 17 Secrets of Stardom. I now have 20 of those products, which I recorded all in the same way. I now have three online programs. Which the Book Creation Workshop and Spotlight 101 and 30 Seconds in the Spotlight created all in the same way. If she hadn't told me to just do it, to get out of my way. So when you talk about smashing through the plateau or smashing the plateau, sometimes you just have to do it even if it isn't perfect. The other thing is get away from your desk once in a while, because if you feel stifled or you feel like you're at a plateau and you can't smash through it, just move and do something else. Do something different. When I started my Spotlight, Step Into the Spotlight group on LinkedIn, it was because I was sitting there on a January 1st, about 4.5 years ago, thinking, what do I do today? I'm out of steam. I'm out of confidence. I don't feel like doing anything. And I thought, you know what, let me do something kind of a low key, not a step into the spotlight kind of thing. Like most of my activities are, you know, you stand on stage and you have to mesmerize the audience. I didn't feel like that. I was in my flip flops and PJ pants and I was, you know, didn't feel the confidence. So I said, let me do something that's different. It's not an A level activity like standing on stage. It's a B level activity, a more quiet activity. And I started this Step Into the Spotlight group on LinkedIn. It's brought me tons of, you know, radio interviews, TV interviews, podcasts. Actually, I don't accept all the TV interviews because sometimes I want to be in my PJs and flip-flops. But a lot of radio and podcast interviews, a lot of print interviews, and a lot of clients. So, smashing the plateau doesn't always have to be sexy and dramatic, even though it's a great name for a podcast. Sometimes, you know,
sometimes like, it's very fundamental.
Right. So you know what? Smashing the plateau sounds like, you know, on HGTV, I love demo day. You know, the first day where they demolish the place and they can see from the living room to the kitchen and they're all excited. That's smashing the plateau. And that is exhilarating. But sometimes it's just some little tweak that you do. It's just some pressure. You know, I was watching a show about building the pyramids the other day. And some of it, you know, they tried to recreate building one of these limestone blocks that covered the pyramids. And some of it is from smashing and chiseling and hammering and all that stuff. They tried to do it the way the ancient Egyptians did. And some of it was by sliding in this wedge thing and applying pressure. So sometimes just a lot of pressure can also help you break down a wall. So... a lot more where that came from. I could talk for hours about this topic, but, that will get you started.
Let's look into the future. What's coming up for you, Tsufit, and how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Okay. I have another program that I'm currently working on. I'm not sure when I'm going to launch it, but if you want to be on my email list to find out when I launch a new program, because I never do, I promised this 5-6 years ago and I've held true to this. I never do a program live more than once. I do it once live, I record it, and then it gets sold as an online program. So, if you want to be on my email list and also get the free tips about how to stand out in 30 seconds, go to www.spotlightsecrets.com. That's www.spotlightsecrets.com, and fill out both forms. That the first form with your name and email, and the second form will pop up. That's an anti-spam form, and you'll be on my list to find out about what's new and exciting. That's number one. Number two, join my LinkedIn group by going to spotlightgroup.biz. B-I-Z. You can read the Step Into the Spotlight book by going to spotlightbook.com. And you can reply to any of the emails you get from the Spotlight Secrets and be in touch directly with someone who can get you a 15-minute consultation.
Sounds
with
great. Me. Well, Tsufit, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Tsufit, author of Step Into the Spotlight and so much more. Thank you again, Tsufit, for joining us. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion today with Tsufit. To get Tsufit's answer to my bonus question, join our free Smashing the Plateau community on Facebook, where all the practical tips that our guests share on this show will be there waiting for you to sift through and implement in your own business. As I said earlier, our community focuses on the three pillars of Smashing the Plateau in an expertise-based business: how to generate more leads, how to scale your business by hiring the right talent, and how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage new tools like podcasts, social media, and video to fill your pipeline. So go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join. Again, that's smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. We want you to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life.